Jessica Peoples, nutritionist and fitness instructor, joined me in studio. Jessica, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Not too bad at all. And how are you?
I'm fantastic. It's a Saturday morning and couldn't see a better way of having a Saturday morning than talking to you.
Well, thank you very much. We'll wait to see how it goes first. I was just saying there, just as a preamble, it's a new year. People try and set themselves new goals. So it's a great opportunity to speak to you because a lot of us want to get fit or fitter. And I would count myself as one of those. But one of my biggest stumbling blocks to this is, where do you start? Do you know, like, you know, you don't necessarily have to be a larger person to be unhealthy. You know, it can be thinner and be unhealthy as well. So what is the first step if I want to get healthier, get exercise?
Well, I think the mindset is the first place that you have to start with. And if you are thinking about it, that's the right place to start. The second part would be coming over to us at Pine Hill Studios. We've got a great program that another fitness instructor and I have developed, Sarah Marie, at SM Fitness, and I also am a nutritionist. Mm-hmm. So we've worked together to develop this program, and it's really a balanced program called Live Fit. And our idea was that you just want to be able to live fit, and that you have to be able to live while you're getting fit as well. Mm. So it's a really well balanced program.
But where do you start? Is it with walking? Is it with, you know, jogging? You know, because I think what could happen is you could get someone who sort of goes from the couch to the 5K rather too quickly, you know, and that can be a disincentive. It can cause injury. So, you know, say, for instance, I understand you get the plug in for Pine Hill Studios. Don't get me wrong. But even just at home to see how it feels before we approach a professional like yourself, what's the first things we should be doing? You know, is it walking? How much walking would you have to do for it to make any difference? You know where I'm coming from?
Absolutely. I think walking is really big part of our culture here too. And it's something that is very easy to begin with,
because that's because we've no trains, you see.
Right, all you need is a pair of trainers and head outside. Walking is a fantastic place to start, but for me, I actually wouldn't start there because of the rain. If you don't, I don't know if you can hear from the accent, I'm not originally from here, so
You've been here quite some time. I think I have.
I've been here for 8 years, which has given me a good idea of kind of what the culture of Ireland is like. But for me, rain and wind and all of that good stuff kind of deters me from going outside. So I tend to go, when I am looking at my own fitness, I tend to either start training myself because I've got such an extensive background in physical fitness and nutrition and all that good stuff. But I like to go do things with other people. I just enjoy the social interaction of group stuff. So.
And I was just chatting to Cora there, Cora Harvey, who was a guest on the program before you came in, who she goes out running 3-4 times a week. And I kind of put the same question to her, and she says it's important to have someone else or a group of other people to I suppose bounce off each other in terms of motivation. So if you can't find them necessarily, or if you're new to the area, or you know, you spend a lot of time on your own, maybe then, you know, hook up with a studio like your own, for instance, and get into a group that way.
Well, not only that, I think it's really important because a lot of people would, I teach Pilates, and Pilates is really well known for being a physical fitness that's either used for rehabilitation or for correcting a lot of injuries. And so I think a lot of times, like, I've worked with runners that have overdone it or have been working incorrectly. So then in the Pilates, we're seeing a lot of people that we have to kind of fix whatever's happened. Mm. So it's important. My key point there is that an instructor has been trained.
Right, I'm going to push on this one. Yeah. I want to know how much do I have to walk this week for me starting to get fit?
How much?
Make it easy for me.
Get out and
2
walk.
2 miles? A kilometre?
If you want to. I mean,
do I have to jog?
No, you don't. What you need to do is get your heart rate up, and whatever fitness is going to do that to get your heart rate up, that's what's important.
So it could be something in the house initially to sort of get the blood flowing.
You can jump around and dance if you wanted to and do some jumping jacks. Anything that's going to take your heart rate up above a normal heart rate for a good 30 minutes minimal, that's what's going to start to get you in shape.
Well, I'm running at 120 with anxiety all the time anyway, so I'll have to go up to 160. And what's the balance between nutrition, the diet, and exercise? Because there's no point, you know, sort of getting that heart rate up if you sit down then and, you know, perhaps put bad stuff into your body. So what initially should we be introducing into our diets then? And then maybe what should we be excluding?
Well, there's all the obvious answers. And the part that I think a lot of people, whenever they go in to do fitness and nutritional work, is that they do think they have to exclude things. Mm-hmm. In particular, excluding whole food groups at times, which isn't the best way to go. Mm. Really, the best way is to talk to a nutritional consultant. If you're concerned around. If it's a time, like it's the first of the year, it's a great time to get started and people are thinking healthy. And all of the lovely things that we were eating last month are all kind of going away and we're looking at different foods again. So really just taking away all of your refined sugars, cutting down on
what's alcohol. Refined sugar?
Refined sugars. Oh, cakes, biscuits.
Okay, yeah, all the nice stuff,
things.
Right? Okay.
Yes, everything you were eating last month as part of Christmas, chocolates, all those lovely biscuits and things.
It's the treats, really. Cut the treats out. And that can form part of the New Year's resolution as well. So,
absolutely.
You know, well, I think a lot of people are prepared to do that because maybe many of us have spoiled ourselves in December.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing to say. If I can cut down on the goodies, the biscuits, the chocolate cakes, the sweets,
and eat broccoli,
the snacks,
please. Just get some more vegetables. You know, if you can get a few more vegetables into your diet that aren't laced with a bunch of butter and cut down on your treats, definitely that's a good place to start.
Okay, that's a good bit of advice. What about potatoes and bread, white bread?
Yes.
Are they bad for you? Or are they things you should sort of try and limit a little bit?
Absolutely. Refined carbohydrates is what we're going to call that.
You're going to have to tell me what... Okay, that's what it is.
Anything fluffy and white as far as carbohydrates are concerned are going to just spike your sugar. And they're practically doing the same thing that a treat is going to do as far as your blood sugar is concerned. And when we're talking about weight and getting fit, our blood sugar is really important because if we've got too much sugar in our blood, it's going to get stored and that turns into fat.
Right, then. So what would be an alternative to, say, for instance, the chocolate sweets? You know, if you like a nibble and you want to maybe to help remove them from your diet but replace them with something, what's healthy?
Well, do you see those muffins that I handed you when
I walked
in? Those spelt banana nut muffins, those are a great thing to start with. That's a lovely, healthy treat. It took me 5 minutes to put it together.
Did you actually make those?
I did.
Oh, I can't wait to help.
Absolutely.
Them.
Home bacon for you.
Fantastic. You're very good, Jessica.
So that's actually one of the recipes involved in the Live Fit program, and that's the nutritional side of what I've done with the program that Sarah Marie at SM Fitness and I are running. And that consists of recipes and daily food intake and really just talking to people and getting one-on-one with them so that we can give them a personalized service.
I hear a bit of talk about, you know, people trying to get their five, I think it's 12 a day in China or something, but we have five a day here.
Wow.
It is, that's the way they do it over there, but we're down to five a day. And they think if they juice everything, that's their five a day. But there's rules to that, isn't there?
You
don't juice fruit, but you can juice vegetables.
You can juice anything, but when we're talking about your five a day, fruit is can only be considered one of your five. So even if you had three juices, one is only what's going to be considered.
That's disappointing.
It is, because it's quite handy. But the problem, again, is that you're taking away all of the fiber. Mm. So it's acting like a big sugar rush.
So as much as you can, eat fruit whole. Would that be advice?
That's probably good. I'm all for juicing. I think it has its time and place, and I really would. I have a juicer at home, and I utilize it quite a bit. But it's kind of like
what's his name? It's electronic juicer.
That's it. But you know, I kind of think of juice as a multivitamin.
Yeah,
it's a supplement. It's not my diet. So, but there is a time and place for fruit juice. But I'm talking about proper juiced, fresh, not your orange juice out of a carton.
Yeah.
So this would all be fresh juice.
A couple of questions, if you don't mind. I'm a 55-year-old man who needs to lose 4 stone. They describe themselves as reasonably fit and healthy. How would you suggest they go about doing so?
Well, diet and exercise is always the first place to start, and getting a good idea of what the diet is that you've got, getting in and having somebody assess what you're doing first, and then just increasing your activity is going to be the best way. I mean, really, when it comes to activity, whatever you lock onto that you enjoy, that's the best thing to do. And then you might find that you plateau and you can change things up about a bit.
Yeah,
and
but
take different
there might
things.
Be three options in reality for a lot of us. You know, like I would live in a rural area, for instance, so I couldn't necessarily, you know, access your services. So maybe it could be cycling, running or walking in reality, or something else in the house. What would be best for this person? So say he were to cut out the treats, maybe cut down on the potatoes and white bread, and you know, brisk walking, that would...
Absolutely. If he could get like 2 or maybe 3 times where he's getting a cardiovascular kind of exercise that could be handled either with swimming or exercise, running or walking or cycling. And then ideally you'd want to add some weight training to that as well, so that you're building strength and muscle, because it's really important that not only that you're burning, but that you're building, because as you build more muscle, you're actually going to burn more calories by that.
Is it true, a caller asks, that you're better doing a 20-minute exercise class than going for a 1-hour run?
It depends. If your 1 hour run is not pushing you to your 80%, that 20 minutes, if you are being pushed to about an 80% of what you can deal with, 100% being that you're going to fall over and pass out, you know, that's where you want to be working out to. So if you're getting a good quality 20 minutes in, absolutely, it's going to be better than taking a nice little stroll. Yeah. But, you know, there's something to be said for fresh air and what it does psychologically as well for
as
getting
long as
outside.
It's not raining, according to you. should we exclude sugar altogether from our diet, a caller asks?
I would say yes. Fruit sugars, when I talk about sugar, I'm talking about the white fluffy stuff that's put into cakes and biscuits. When you're talking about natural sugars that are in fruits and other things, you know, though there's a really a lot of benefits that go with the fruits. We're getting vitamins and minerals and all these trace things that we don't even know what they do for us yet. So you wouldn't want to take away those kinds of sugars. But anything that is a white fluffy sugar, absolutely, there's no reason for it in our diet.
A caller said that I've heard that diet foods are not good to eat. Are you better with full fat?
It depends on which it is, because I've had a big debate about margarine versus butter. Mm-hmm. Both of those are full fat. But there's a lot of different thinking as we discover more. My degree is in food science and nutrition, so I understand the food science of it quite well. So it's not just about eating this or that. It's what it's doing in our body and how our body is metabolizing those things. So it depends. Like, we've just had some new research that's done on milk and how the enzymes break down the fat in milk. And what we once thought full fat milk was completely wrong, and we should be drinking skim. You know, there's new research that's supporting that maybe we have more to learn in that area. So it really is a case by case situation where it depends on each item.
You brought me in these lovely buns, which you made yourself. I can't wait to taste one of those. Do you do that for yourself so that you know what's going into the food that you're eating?
As much as possible, I do. The other thing is, you do have to, I mean, there's always going to be balances with these things. I'm a busy person too, so I don't always have time. It's been a luxury to be able to sit home and make everything from scratch. But I've also been able to find kind of shortcut ways of being healthy, things that are quick, things that are on the go. And so that's a really good way of just being able to be balanced, is understanding how you can, you know, there's the risk versus the benefit sometimes.
There's a lot of talk about it, making sure that your core is strong, you know, particularly when you're exercising, because I presume that, you know, especially as I said a little earlier on, if you're going from zero to hero very quickly, you do have to make sure that your body is strong enough to sort of take what you're doing to it.
Yes.
And exercise in and of itself will not necessarily give you that strength, if you know what I mean. So how do we ensure that when we're exercising, we're not harming ourselves as well? You know, is there
Again, with going to a professional fitness instructor like myself or Sarah Marie, she does a class called Piloxing, which is a combination of Pilates, dancing, and boxing. And it's quite a great workout. It's really fun. I take the class myself, so it's good fun. And then Pilates, like I said before, those are all core strengthening things. And we're looking at the anatomy of the body and how it works.
That's a holistic approach, to use that old phrase.
It is. Well, it's holistic. I mean, we are whole people, so we have to look at the whole thing. But really, it's that we're looking at how the body moves levers and fulcrums, and making sure that we're supporting the body in a safe way. And so a professional fitness instructor is going to be watching their entire class, making sure that we're doing that. But the core part is definitely anything that's got Pilates attached to that.
Pilates because of your you were saying earlier on, you don't actually run yourself, do you? No, because of your background in dancing and ballet.
That's right. I have a extensive dance background. I'm a dance teacher as well, and most of that has been ballet. So, and one of the things that signifies and distinct makes ballet is the turnout of the legs. So we work the hip flexors quite a bit.
There's a bit of that with Irish dancing too, isn't there?
Yeah, they're actually rotating a little bit differently. We're taking that from the hip, and that's where the running comes in, is that whenever you're running, you're actually strengthening the hip flexors in a much different way than what ballet needs to. So I've found that my running and my ballet sometimes work against each other. So it's just been better for
me. Too much exercise. You have to choose your exercise. Did you compete in ballet or going back?
Ballet's not really a competitive sport as such.
I meant to say perform. I beg your pardon. Did you perform... I mean, you're a teacher now, but did you perform previously?
Yeah, I was a professional dancer. I was a contemporary dancer in a company in America, but I have an extensive ballet background. I've always been a ballet instructor, and I still perform every once in a while whenever the opportunity comes.
What are your suggestions for a person who has fibromyalgia? What exercise is best for those who suffer from this?
Well, that's an autoimmune disease that seems like it's becoming very prevalent. And as much as definitely Pilates, anything that is a little bit to get started, I would say, anything that is, you know, going to allow the body to work in strength and also to it's an inflammation of the joints and the whole entire body. So anytime you're getting your blood going, it's going to help that. But diet actually is the thing that comes to my mind when you're talking about fibromyalgia. Is that would be the first place that I would start. Obviously, exercise is going to be helpful as well, but I would be looking at the diet first to see what is causing extra inflammation.
And is that something that you'd need to get a blood test on, or is it something a nutritionist you'd work with on, or both? Or
Well, if you have it, you've been to the doctor, so they've probably done quite a few tests on it. That's not something that's too easy to self-diagnose. So I would say if you've been to the doctor and that's something that you've been diagnosed with, then they can refer you on to working with a nutritionist, or you can seek after that yourself. But I would definitely do that. But as far as exercise with anybody, I don't see anything that would keep you from doing any exercise with that.
Caller says, I need to increase my weight. Have you any suggestions? I have a healthy diet but can't put on weight.
First thing, and this is where everything's so individualized, is that to have a conversation with that person to see what else is going on in their life. Increasing good carbohydrates is a good way of putting on weight, and making sure that they're getting all of the protein that they need, making sure that they're not keeping just looking at the calorie intake of the person, and then seeing what their activity level is and their stress level as well. Sometimes that's a big, there's other habits that we get into that play a part. It's not always so black and white. That's why working on a personalised program is so important to do.
And I'm sure it'll apply to this question as well. A caller has gout really bad in both feet. Mm-hmm. Is there exercise or diet that would help in that regard?
There is, absolutely. I mean, that's something that I would be wanting to talk to you about on a personal level with a client. But there is, nutrition and exercise are going to help the circulation. Nutrition is going to definitely help the inflammation that's happening for that person. And so making sure that they're not eating key trigger items, which tends to sometimes put people into...
A lot of this too is the first step, isn't it? And I don't mean right to that last question, but in terms of improving your fitness or improving your diet, and that's why I think we focus sometimes so much in the Gregorian calendar for no real reason whatsoever.
It's just
because it's the kickstart, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's the first step of that journey, and it's taking that step. It's the thing that we have to overcome.
It is, and I think it's a good time. There's definitely a big psychological part to that, isn't it? That we feel like the first day of the year, this is a fresh start. And then because the next seasons that are among us are where everything is fresh and starting again, and it just feels like the time. It's funny, there's a lot of holistic practitioners that would do, like an annual detox, and this is usually the time that they would go into it because our circadian rhythms are attached to nature.
Oh, what?
Our sleep and wake cycles the body metabolizes everything. So, we start to wake up whenever the world starts to become a bit brighter, don't we? And we can get a little bit more sleepy when the day is shorter.
And the easiest way to just to notice that is when the sun's out, how everybody's personality changes.
I know, the smiles. Everybody's smiling. Everybody's out walking. It's lovely to see the people out and about.
Right, that's all the time we have. I can't believe it's gone in so quickly. So, Jessica, if anyone wants to contact you directly, it's the you could have jumped in there.
Pine Hill Studios is where we're at, but right. smfitness.ie is a great website with all of our contact details and everything.
And if people want to sort of maybe just reach out and ask about these specific,
always find us on Facebook too. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
It's been great to have you in. Hopefully
Thank
we'll
you
get you
much.
Back. You'll come
Absolutely.
Back, will you?
I will.
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
Bally out.
I might just grand jeté right out the door.
Thank you so much for the buns.
Welcome.
I'm really looking forward to those.
Good stuff.
I might share them with Yvonne.
Don't have to.
I'm not guaranteeing it.
Right,
Jessica Peoples,
you
have a breath of fresh air, and thank you so much for calling in. And you're very welcome back to the weekend edition here on Highland Radio with me, Greg Hughes. 11:30 this Saturday morning. Crime Prevention Officer, Garda Sergeant Paul Wallace, a very good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Thank you for joining us on the programme again. And it's off the back of a warning you issued last evening, a specific warning to businesses. And these aren't ad hoc and random. It's off the back of reliable information and reported crime, isn't it, Paul?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, it's we've had a number of what we'd call, I suppose, specific break-ins to premises over the Christmas period, and we had warned people about this, particularly business owners, prior to Christmas time. And basically, they're targeting high-value goods, which are, you know, fairly easily sold off then at a later stage. So we've renewed an appeal there to the business owners to review or have a look at their security and see is there any improvements that can be made rather than the criminal highlighting this when they're a victim of a burglary.
What has been the MO in these recent couple of burglaries?
And a number of them, what they've done is they've actually triggered the alarm and they've kind of sat in the shadows then and carried out surveillance to see what was the response time, in particular of the key holder. The key holder comes in and checks the premises, thinks all is in order. They have a time then to see how long to take the key holder to respond to the alarm activation. And later on then in the night, in the dead of night as such, maybe 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, they trigger the alarm again. And they know then they have X number of minutes or whatever to carry out their thievery as such.
And this is why it's always, or it can be difficult to keep one step ahead of these people, because you know that's another level of planning. That how do we counteract it?
Yeah, well, it is another level of planning as such. And basically, what happens then is these people move on to another place. They're highly mobile. They're moving around the country. It's not in the county particularly. They're moving around the country, and they could be moving to Monaghan or Galway, Mayo, down the south, maybe for their next burglary. You know, they move away again, so it makes the whole investigation process fairly difficult. You're relying on trace evidence, you're relying on CCTV, you know, secondary evidence. So what we would be saying to people that have commercial premises or businesses, first of all, get your installer, alarm installer in, and have a look to make sure it's operating correctly and it's fit, you know, because there's been a lot of advancements lately, and people maybe put in an alarm maybe 5, 10, 15 years ago, and they think it just is something you only have to do once. It's not. It's something you have to keep upgrading as such. All commercial premises then, they require secondary signalling. What that means is if the phone lines go down or the electrical power goes down, and these people have been known to do this, you need a secondary device that will activate and inform the monitoring station. And a lot of commercial premises seem to be around the county, don't seem to see the necessity for this, but the time has come where people have to be open to change. Again, getting your local electrician to fit an alarm, Greg, it's not really the best, and it's not to be taking work away from them, but the proper installers, the registered installers who have now by legislation to be registered with the Private Security Authority, they are aware of the different techniques used.
And the workarounds and the little bit of insider knowledge that these criminals can have.
Exactly. And the alarm then should be to a European norm standard, and that's your safeguard. You know, that's just looking at the whole alarms thing, but there's no point in having an alarm on a building that the physical security is poor. You know, the simple things, the boring items as such, like your doors, your windows, you know, your shutters, that sort of thing, because they will target the place that's weak. They will look, and then they will do their surveillance on it. It's a job to them. They're professionals in their field, in the criminal field as such.
And as you say, they're very mobile, because it was only a couple of days ago there was something like £20,000 worth of tools stolen in Derry. You've been talking about reported crime here in Donegal, and I'm sure there are other crimes down the country that may be well connected. So we really have to up our game to stay ahead of these guys, because not, as you say, not giving them any credit whatsoever, that's their job and they know what they're doing. So we have to ensure that we make it as difficult as is possible to prevent them from doing so. Do we need then to be more cautious, Sergeant, of what we might see as sort of, you know, hello, our alarms going off as a hoax?
Yeah, well, it's just if an alarm goes off and there seems to be no obvious reason, you know, you just want to be thinking about that, and you'd want to be talking to the guards about it, your local guards. And again, even key holders should have a protocol in place with their guards. And a lot of people don't see the necessity for this, because we don't want a key holder responding to an alarm activation on their own, you know, particularly where there's high value stuff, high value goods, because they could be victim of assault then, or worse. So there should be some protocol in place that we'll meet at a predetermined point before we go to the premises. Now, I know a number of people who are sort of thinking outside the box and using technology now are able to go onto their smartphone, view the premises before they go there at all, and they know what they're meeting as such. And that's where a simple thing like having the lighting integrated with the alarm is something that I'm blue in the face really talking to the industry about, and they still at times just don't seem to get it. As where you have an alarm activation, a number of lights should light up in the premises. Mm. Because if you have CCTV, which is your next layer of security, it will aid the CCTV to collect proper images.
Because we've all seen that grainy CCTV, yeah. And you wonder sometimes what's the point of putting it in if you can't so much as make out, a colour of clothing.
And a lot of the CCTV we look at is absolutely useless, and people think we should be able to make it work as such. But there's a standard for court prosecutions, so a bit of light helps along. And the same thing is another thing is the hard drive for the CCTV. The professional criminal now will target that. Mm. That's the first thing one of the gang will be sent to do, is to get to where the hard drive is and remove it, because that's taking away the secondary evidence then. So, you know, a lot of stuff like that. Then, I suppose, the public have a role here as well. People who are buying stuff at knockdown prices, you are feeding into crime, and, you know,
you're supporting the industry, but you know what I mean. Of course,
they have to be able to get it away, you know, and you've seen that, you know, down your where you're living yourself in the south of the county, where we had a large burglary in the Cara pharmacy there in Bundoran, and same thing. There's no point in taking and stealing high quality, high value, the fragrances and stuff, if you haven't got a market for it.
That's it indeed. Because, you know, as you say, if you're coming up to Christmas, if someone's offering you a product that should cost 50 quid and they're asking you for 15, well, you can work it out yourself, probably. A caller says, if an alarm is activated twice or more, do the Gardaí answer the call from the monitor? I'm not sure if that makes sense.
Well, it doesn't. people have this opinion or view that the guards respond to all types of alarms, and they don't. They have to be. The alarm has to be to a standard, which is that European norm EN50131 that I mentioned. It has to be monitored to an approved monitoring station, and it has to be part of the Garda intruder alarm policy. So that's the mechanism in having a Garda response. You know, but depending on the level of threat or the level of security required. People, maybe if it's a lower level, may have the alarm monitored to their own phone, but there's no problem in them and letting the guards know, look, I've had an alarm activation, and going to check on the premises. Mm-hmm. I just want to make you aware. But there is then, and the others that are part of the intruder alarm policy, the guards have agreed, and there's a protocol there that they will respond to that.
And look, if there's two false alarms go off in safe, we'll use Letterkenny for an example, and the Gardaí are even just notified by a business owner, say, look, I've checked the premises, there's nothing going on. But if you were to get two or three of those calls, then you could, from a crime prevention point of view, say, well, I wonder, is there someone going around triggering these alarms, and that's intelligence maybe that can be acted upon.
Yeah, and you see, we've had different cases there where they've tried to rip off the alarm bell and put it into water and all of this sort of thing. You know, so the criminal fraternity, they're changing their game constantly all the time. But if somebody requires advice or wants to discuss, there's no problem, and they're making contact with me. I'll go out and maybe review their security, give them a bit of advice. Okay. There has been a lot of advances, and I suppose we'll go back to the old, what we call the onion theory, and I think I discussed it with you before. If you slice an onion in half, you have a lot of layers, and your layers are your layers of security. A number of people, or people in general sometimes, base all their security around CCTV. Oh, I'll fit CCTV and that'll sort everything. CCTV is a great tool in the right context.
Well, I can safely say it's the first time you've done the onion one on me, Paul. And I still don't understand it.
You cut it in half
or you peel it?
No, you cut it in half, and somebody was looking through my phone one day and just said, what are you doing with a photograph of an onion and an onion cut in half? And I was using it for a PowerPoint. But basically, the centre of the onion, and I have been known...
I thought you were going to have to find something else, Paul.
The centre of the onion is what you want to protect.
Right,
and then you have all the layers.
It's as simple as that.
It's a layered approach. So, you know, we have to keep it light-hearted too, Greg.
I know, Paul.
The other advancements, I suppose, in relation to CCTV now can be transmitted over what they call IP, the same as through the internet. And the quality, you know, is so good. And you can see that. That's evident in Crime Call there. Now, you can see when they do their section on CCTV,
the
quality has come up. You know, it's coming up. It's maybe not there 100%.
Yeah, but that's how they end up on that program, because it's of a certain standard. It's that chicken and egg. And you made that point earlier, and it's a very important one. Garda Sergeant Paul Wallace, thank you for always having the time for us and getting that message out there. And I know you're very accessible to not just the business community, but the wider community groups and what have you. And hopefully it's not too long before we're speaking to you again to get some more, well, not off the back of crime, of course, but just to get that word out there and get the information out there. So we do appreciate you coming on, Paul.
That's great, Greg, and I'd just like to take the opportunity to wish you a Happy New Year as well, as it's the first time we've spoken this in 2015.
Indeed, and same to you and yours. That's Garda Sergeant Paul Wallace speaking to us there. Just some requests before we take a break, and then we're going to be chatting to the Irish Coast Guard about a busy 2014. Our mummy Jennifer Hegarty in Buncrana, happy birthday, mummy, from Killian, Yvonne, and also for Joshua. Our grandson Callum Gillen in Convoy, happy 11th birthday to you from Granny and Grandad Kilpatrick. For Teresa McCallion and John Gallagher, they're getting married today, from Anne, Jim and all the family. Well, let's see what kind of weather they're going to have if they're getting married. Cold, cloudy and wet at first, with occasional heavy falls of rain. The rain will clear to brighter conditions towards noon, which is now, which is great. It'll be cold but bright, temperatures 5 or 6 degrees. So I suppose at this time of year, if it's not snowing or raining, you're doing quite well there. For Kathleen Stevenson in Remelton, happy birthday to you from Laura and Brian. Another one for you, Kathleen Stevenson in Remelton. Happy birthday from granddaughter Hannah Boyce. And for Carl McElhenney and Aoife Blaney, they're getting married today, from Mum, Dad and all the McElhenney family in Downing. So that's just a few requests to catch up on there. Right, we're going to be back with the Coast Guard after this break. Okay, next up on the programme, we learnt this week that the Irish Coast Guard has seen a record response for 2014. And to discuss the annual statistics, we're joined on the programme now by the Director of the Irish Coast Guard, Chris Reynolds. Good morning to you, Chris.
Good morning.
So 2014, another record year. I believe 2012 was as well. I'm open to correction on that. Why do you think we've seen such an increase?
Well, some of it's good news in that we've had an excellent summer and we've had an increase in tourism. And of course, with the rise in the prosperity in Ireland, a lot of people are taking back to the water for leisure activities such as kitesurfing and that sort of thing.
But what we're not doing is obviously taking to the water with enough care.
There's always that element. We would always say, always wear a life jacket, always assume that something is going to happen. It only has to happen to you once before it becomes too much to handle. So call us as soon as you know you're in trouble or even think you're in trouble. We prefer to get a call and turn back than not get that call until it's too late.
One of the biggest increases recorded was for surfers and kite surfers requiring assistance.
Indeed, I'm actually at the moment in Donegal itself and looking out over a bay full of kite surfers out in quite extreme weather. The majority of them can look after themselves, but occasionally they do get in trouble and they become very difficult to rescue in that they're in surf and quite often very difficult places to get at.
And is the key to know your limitations to even if you're taking part in diving, for instance, or any of these more extreme sports, to know really that you have the fitness for it? In other words, prepare for the worst or know if you're capable of dealing with the worst.
That's exactly it. We'd always recommend you join an organisation that has agreed safety standards and safety systems. But people do push themselves. The whole thing about going underwater is quite often it's the experience that closeness with nature. But it only takes one event that it becomes an event that you can't handle. So you have to be prepared for the worst, prepared that you might end up in the water and you might need assistance.
And indeed, in Donegal, we had a number of diving tragedies and we had warnings along the lines I've already outlined that you have to be sure that you have a certain level of fitness and preparation.
Absolutely. It is extremely... when you're just doing normal activity, that's one thing. When you end up in the cold water, you're cold, you're encumbered with suits or diving gear, you really have to be fit and ready for that dive. It's not just a dive you're planning to do, it's a dive you might end up having to do because things go wrong.
Going back a few years, it would be quite difficult to get your hands on a kayak or other pleasure craft of that size, but now we have seen them coming into the country quite cheaply and people are getting their hands on them, and perhaps, you know, those who wouldn't have had an interest in before are going out onto the water. Is that a concern?
It is and it isn't. I mean, if you take the right safety precautions and you take care of yourself, you'll be okay. Where we see the big rise is people who go out in the water with no training, with no safety knowledge, who might go into a supermarket and buy a big inflatable canoe and head out onto the water to go fishing. This is the real worry to us, is the people who do take to the water because they suddenly have a few cents in their pocket and they want to go out and experience that nature, but aren't prepared and aren't trained and haven't joined an organisation that can help them prepare.
So what are the key messages? So particularly mountain climbing and what have you, and people being stranded on walks has been an issue. But if you're going out to sea or if you're going on a walk, what are the key things you should do in terms of, you know, letting people know where you're at or when you're due back and so on?
Well, that's the most important thing. You have to tell people where you're going, how many people are going with you, the route you intend taking or where you intend sailing to, but most importantly, when you're due back. And those people must take that role seriously. And if you're not back on time, they have to go and look for you. And if they, in any way, in doubt, call the emergency services immediately. Don't wait, because by the time if you wait too long, suddenly it's dark. Now we're sending out helicopters and rescue teams into darkness looking for you. Tell us early, get this planned on in time, and have somebody competent ashore are waiting for you that will call us as soon as you're overdue.
Now, we know locally, and I'm sure it's, I'm absolutely sure it's the same across the country, that people have made phone calls and it's turned out that people weren't in difficulty at all. And I know the Coast Guard would never discourage anyone from ringing up if they had any concerns. But have hoax calls, in other words, someone ringing with bad intentions, been a problem in 2014?
Hoax calls have gone down in 2014, but nuisance calls have gone up. A hoax call would be somebody calling us and getting us to launch a helicopter or a lifeboat. And we're getting better and better at recognizing that type of call. And with modern technology, we can see where the call is coming from, see the number. We are getting a rise in nuisance calls, quite often school children after school or a weekend or late on a Saturday night. They are a nuisance. We don't launch anything to them, but they take up valuable time. And they are a problem.
Okay, and that's something we all need to be conscious of. Well, we hope 2015 is another successful year in terms of the amount of lives the Irish Coast Guard saves, and we appreciate you coming on to discuss last year with us, Chris.
May I just say one thing before I go?
Of course.
Just to thank all the rescue organisations and rescue volunteers, both in the Coast Guard, Mountain Rescue, the lifeboats and the other agencies for the time they gave up. It's absolutely incredible what the volunteers do for rescue in Ireland, and we couldn't afford to do it without them.
Indeed. Chris Reynolds, Director of the Irish Coast Guard, thank you so much. Now, joined on the line by Lynn McDevitt. Lynn, we were talking about getting fit and perhaps a bit of weight loss in the new year. And once again, Operation Transformation is back, and you can do what we're talking about and also support the Good and New Cancer Bus.
Yes, Greg. It starts on Monday at 5:30 in the Aura. We're doing it this year in conjunction with the Aura Leisure Centre.
Tell us more.
We have got a registered nutritionist dietitian on board. We have previous winners and helpers from the last 3 years. This is our third year. And there'll be hill walking groups, there'll be couch to 5K, there will be boot camp, dancing classes and much more. You just have to turn up on the night.
It's proved very successful and very effective for those taking part in the previous occasions it's been run.
Yes, because we make it fun, you know, like we're only normal people, we're not robots, everybody is at a different fitness level. We have people there on hand to help with each fitness level. Hope you come along, I heard you saying that you might like to start. The Couch to 5K, we have the running track 3 nights a week. From...
I have commitment issues, Lynn.
Oh, so have I. don't be a coward, no, you come along. Previous Highlands.
You summed me up in one word there. Coward is the word, Lynn. There's no doubt about it.
We have the track at the Ara 3 nights a week from 8 till 9. You can walk round it, run round it, crawl round it, but there will be people on hand to help with everything.
And it's, as you say, it's an 8-week commitment, which is not a massive part of anyone's life. But, you know, as I said earlier on, people that have taken part previously, you see the results in how you feel and perhaps how you look over the course of that 8 weeks, and it's a group of people and you have professionals and experts to motivate you and push you along. It's almost no excuse, isn't it?
Oh, there's no excuse for anybody. If I can do it, anybody can. And it's just going to be good crack. As I say, we're doing it to help the cancer patients on their way, and we're doing it for ourselves as well. It's a way to get rid of all the cobwebs out your head, even as a small walking group, like 2 nights a week. If you don't want to do it in the track, leaves a good news shop and goes round the town and back. Like, there's something in it for everybody this year.
Okay, remind us of the registration again.
Right, the registration, it'll be €80 for the 8 weeks, but you can get a sponsorship for them, and you can go round your family and friends to ask for a small donation to help you along your way, or you can just pay £10 a week yourself for the 8 weeks.
And registration's on Monday.
5:30 in the Aura Leisure Centre in Letterkenny.
Super.
Monday, this Monday from 5:30.
You're getting fit, you're getting in shape, and you're supporting a worthy cause in the...
All at the same time.
Lynn McDevitt, always a pleasure.
Greg, can I just say thanks to everybody that helped us out this year and doing everything they could for us to help the cancer patients on their way, because you know we are all volunteers and we get no funding from the Relay for Life or the Irish Cancer Society, and we just feel that we are running from one, you know, fundraiser to another. But if it wasn't for the Donegal people out there, Greg, we couldn't do what we are doing for our Donegal cancer patients.
Lynn
and
McDevitt,
I want to thank Highland Radio and you, Greg, for doing all that you have done for us in the past.
Thank you so much, Lynn McDevitt there. That's all we have time for me, Greg Hughes, and producer Yvonne McFadden. Have a fantastic weekend. We'll chat to you next Saturday from 10.